Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. We're deep into summer reading, and there's nothing better than immersing ourselves in a great novel that takes us away to another place with characters we can relate to. Author Ellen Hildebrand is a pro at this, and in her novel Summerland, we're brought back to Nantucket, where she tackles something new by splitting her narrators between parents and their teenage children to tell the story of heartbreak and forgiveness.
This is a novel about four teenagers who, you know, get in a car on graduation night. They're juniors, not seniors, but the car crashes and the driver dies, and it's a girl named Penny Alistair, and her twin brother is left in a coma. So it is told from the point of view of three of the teenagers, which I have to say was very interesting and a lot of fun to do.
Fun in what way?
I don't know how other people feel, but in some ways I feel like I'm still 17 in my heart, even though I'm going to be 43 next week. And I think that's because when you are sort of developing your personhood, it's happening, you know, when you're 16 and 17 and 18 years old. And so I feel very connected to that part of myself, of my youth. And so it was fun to be able to sort of tap into, you know, the teenage emotions and write about, you know, that time in someone's life. So I really enjoyed that.
And the girl that died, Penny, she was really the golden girl of Nantucket.
Yes, she was an incredible singer and a well-liked, great student, wonderful kid. I think, you know, without, you know, being too much of a spoiler, obviously there were other things going on with Penny that nobody could either understand or really knew about.
And it's obviously very hard for Hobby, who is her twin brother, but also Zoe. And you spoke about being able to tap into that 17-year-old self. And Zoe kind of is that person who, I don't want to say she didn't grow up, but at the same time, she wanted to be able to live her life the way she wanted to.
Exactly right. So Zoe is the mother, and she, I mean, I think that's a really, really good point, is that she, you know, she had the children, she had the twins when she was young. Her husband died before the twins were born. And I think she probably, there is a part of her that is a little bit, sort of feels gypped out of her youth. And so she is very protective of her own personhood. And especially, I think, when the children are young, doesn't, you know, puts herself first, maybe sometimes ahead of them, and I think maybe she blames herself for that later, you know, with everything that happens.
And you can see that the other mothers are fairly jealous of how close Zoe and Penny were with each other and how they would tell each other everything, whereas we have Lynn and Demeter, who was also in the car when it went over the side of the hill, that they're growing further and further apart.
Right. And I think that, you know, obviously, every mother and daughter are different, and you know. But there are certain, you know, certain kinds of relationships, I think, that are fairly universal. And Penny and Zoe had one of those extremely close, you know, best friend relationships. And yet, you know, Zoe missed, you know, some big signs that her daughter actually wasn't okay. And then with Lynn and Demeter, there sort of has always been a sort of a disconnect, and then the disconnect, you know, as Demeter grows into a teenager, just gets more and more and more. And so I think it's very frustrating for Lynn, for sure.
And Lynn and Zoe, I think, are similar in the sense that neither one sees the downward spiral that both of their girls are taking.
Exactly right.
And then on the flip side, there's Ava and Jake, and Ava is in her own private hell, whereas Jake, her son, who is also the love of Penny's life, where Penny is the love of his life, that he sees there's something a little bit changing in Penny, and he's blaming his mother for it.
Yes, I think Ava and Penny connected on a certain level, but it was kept fairly quiet, I think, Ava's connection to Penny. And so once it comes out, sort of, you know, after what happens, I think Ava feels a lot of personal responsibility, and I think maybe Jake blames his mother because, you know, his mother, who was someone who was close to Penny on another level and might have been able to stop what happened, or possibly. So, the recurring theme in this book is that, you know, no one is directly responsible for the accident, and nobody is not responsible. And that was sort of what I wanted to investigate. Like, when something like this happens and a tragedy like this happens, like, who is to blame? Aren't we all to blame? And so the book is really an exploration of, you know, how our lives are interconnected and how they lead to moments like this.
And the secrets. Obviously, being set on Nantucket, it's such a small, close-knit community, and everybody has their own secrets and always wonders, did somebody else find it out?
Right. Absolutely right. We all have things that are private. and I definitely think that's true of most of my characters. So it certainly seems to be the case here. And I think living on an island, you know, does you know, on the one hand, it exposes you because you can't run away. And on the other hand, it sort of keeps you safe.
Now, you write a book a year, and that's got to be tough.
Yeah, it's extremely tough. I have, I have sort of a routine over the course of the year of how I like to get it done. I start the book in January, and I write through the winter. And then normally I take a vacation. So this year I was in St. John by myself for 5 weeks, so I got a lot of composing done then. And then the summer things get really nutty, and I get a little bit less done. But I normally finish the book in September, and then I take 8 weeks again away and revise it. And then I hand it in at Christmas. So it's a tough schedule because I'm always finishing a book right at Christmas, and I have 3 young children, and so that's a crazy time for me.
I'll bet it is. Your books are chick lit, and I love that about it. Every time I see one of your books, I'm like, oh, yes, this is perfect summer reading.
Right.
And is that okay with you to be defined or be in that category of chick lit?
Well, I'm really trying. On the one hand, you know, it works for you both. It cuts both ways. On the one hand, I'm so fortunate because when we walk into a Barnes & Noble, you know, we know there are a million choices. And so to be able to have a definite category, you know, this is your summer read. And I think lots and lots of women, you know, whether they work in Cleveland in a cubicle somewhere, to get my book makes them feel like it's summer. And it gives sort of this illusion of like the culture of American summer, which, you know, only a very privileged portion of us are able to experience. You know, I happen to live in Nantucket, and, you know, I get to go to the beach every day if I feel so inclined, and eat corn on the cob and blueberry pie and do all the summertime things and surf with my children. And that's great. But there are people who aren't able to do that. And so one of the things that I like about my books is it gives people summertime, and they feel like, even if they're not at the beach, they feel like they're at the beach. They feel like they're doing summertime things. So to be able to be a beach book, I think, is good. Now, I'm constantly trying to break people's expectations of what a beach book is. The books are not stupid, and they're not frivolous. And, you know, I really try and put a lot of meaning and good, well-thought characters. So I'm always trying to, like, build a better beach book, basically, with each new novel.
I'd have to say I'd put this on the level of the Jodi Picoult books.
Yeah, right. She does a good job, too.
Of really getting in there, getting into the minds of each of the characters. When we say chick lit, I don't mean it as a bad thing, obviously, but we can forget ourselves in it. But this book, I felt we were a little bit more angst-ridden.
Yeah.
With the characters.
Yeah. I mean, with every book, the challenge is, you know, how do you get people to connect to your characters? Because that is what makes you want to keep reading. Mm. You know, you want to be able to care about what happens to them. And that's what makes you turn pages. And, you know, I love when people say, you know, I never read, but I read your books, because they're not taxing, but they do have meaning for people. And so, you know, it's that fine line. It's that fine line between, you know, wanting people to truly just be able to relax and enjoy them. And you know, they're not terribly, you know, difficult, but they are gripping. And so to do the two things where the books are giving the readers something to enjoy, but also something to think about.
Absolutely. And you want to feel satisfied at the end.
Right, exactly.
And that's something you do very well. And it's not as if everything's sewn up, everybody lives happily ever after, but you get results. And I think that is one of the things that draws me to your books.
Good. Thank you. Yes, that's the aim.
When I read your books, you know, there's always that looking for that love or losing that love or wanting to find the ultimate love. And for you personally, we imagine our authors who can write love so well in relationships well, whether they're faulty relationships or the ones that are made of fairy tales. But I would assume then that the author is very, very happy in their own relationship and knows it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you know, marriage is, I've been married for 16 years, and marriage is a lot of work, as we know. I have been very, very blessed with my husband, and, you know, it most certainly isn't a fairy tale. I mean, nobody's marriage is a fairy tale. And the other thing is that I'm really, really, you know, I consider my main job to be sort of a student of human nature. So I'm constantly watching people, and I'm at the age now where a lot of my friends are getting divorced, and I'm watching, you know, those relationships unfold and then, you know, new relationships for them blossom. And I give, you know, love and marriage a lot of thought. And, you know, I draw not only on sort of my own experience, but also on, you know, the people that I know and I watch. And, you know, my grandparents have been married, and my grandfather just died, but they had been married 69 years. So I think about, you know, that as being sort of the ultimate, you know, one end of the spectrum where it was, you know, truly just an unbelievable love match. And then, you know, all the way down to, you know, people who, you know, get married and then immediately get divorced, or, you know, and it becomes so contentious and unpleasant. And so I really try and look at the whole entire spectrum of love and really try and think about it when I'm writing my novels.
It absolutely comes through. The name of the new novel is Summerland. Ellen Hildebrand, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Katie.
Again, Ellen Hildebrand's novel is Summerland. It is published by Regan Arthur Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.